meant. "Careful, my lady," Aishi whispered. "Do not unsettle him too much. Men often place pride before reason." Serene nodded. "I can give you a way out, father. I have come to offer you a deal."
"What reason do I have to accept any offers from you, woman?" he snapped. "You have been here nearly a month, and now I find that you have been deceiving me the whole time."
"You will trust me, father, because you have lost 75% of your fleet to pirates. In a few short months, you could lose your throne unless you listen to me." I had in betrayed surprise at her knowledge.
"How do you know these things?"
"Everyone knows, father," Serene said lightly. "It's all over the court. They expect you to fall at the next taxing period."
"I knew it,"
Iodin said, his eyes widening with rage. He began to sweat and curse at the courtiers, railing at their determination to see him off the throne. Serene blinked in surprise. She had made the comment passingly, to keep Iodin off balance, but hadn't expected such a strong reaction. "He's paranoid," she realized. "Why hasn't anyone noticed this before?" However, the speed with which Iodin recovered gave her a clue. He was paranoid, but he kept it well hidden. The way she was jerking his emotions must have weakened his control.
"You propose a deal?"
the king demanded. "I do," Serene said. "Silk is going for a premium in Teode right now, father. One could make quite a profit selling it to the king. And considering certain familial relationships, you might be able to talk Evan Teode into giving you sole mercantile rights in his country." Iodin grew suspicious, his rage cooling as he sensed a bargain. However, the merchant in him immediately began to sniff for problems. Serene gritted her teeth in frustration. It was as the others had told her. Iodin would never accept her offer. It stank too much of deceit.
"An interesting proposal," he admitted. "But I'm afraid that I
would, of course, require something in return," Serene interrupted, thinking quickly. "Call it a fee for setting up the deal between Evan Teode and yourself." Iodin paused.
"What kind of fee are we talking about?" he asked warily.
An exchange was different from a gift. It could be weighed, measured, and, to an extent, trusted. "I want to go inside Elantris," Serene declared.
"What?"
"I have to perform a widow's trial," Serene said. "So I am going to bring food to the Elantrians."
"What possible motivation could you have for doing that, woman?"
"Religious reasons, father," Serene explained. "Shu-Korath teaches us to help those most lowly, and I challenge you to find anyone more lowly than the Elantrians."
"It's out of the question," Iodin said. "Entry into Elantris is forbidden by law."
"A law you made, father," Serene said pointedly. "And therefore you can make exceptions. Think carefully. Your fortune and your throne could balance on your answer." Iodin ground his teeth audibly as he considered the trade.
"You want to enter Elantris with food? For how long?"
"Until I am convinced my duty as Prince Raoden's wife has been fulfilled," Serene said.
"You would go alone?"
"I would take any who were willing to accompany me."
Iodin snorted. "You'll have trouble finding anyone to fill that requirement."
"My problem, not yours."
"First that Fjordel devil starts whipping my people into mobs. Now you would do the same,"
the king mumbled. "No, father," Serene corrected. I want quite the opposite. Chaos would only benefit Wyrn. Believe as you wish, but it is my sole concern to see stability in Aerilon. Iodin continued to think for a moment.
No more than 10 at a time, excluding guards, he finally said. I don't want mass pilgrimages going into Elantris. You will enter an hour before noon, and you will be gone by an hour after noon. No exceptions.
Done, Serene agreed. You may use my Sion to call King Eventio to work out the details of the deal.
I must admit, my lady, that was rather clever.
Aishi bobbed along beside her in the hallway, on the way to her room. Serene had stayed as Iodin spoke with Eventio, mediating as the two worked out the deal. Her father's voice had contained a hearty measure of,
I hope you know what you're doing, Ean, in it.
Eventio was a kind and good king, but he was an absolutely horrible businessman. He kept a fleet of accountants to manage the royal finances. Once Iodin had sensed her father's inability, he struck with the enthusiasm of a raging predator, and only Serene's presence had kept Iodin from leaking away Teod's entire tax revenue in a rampage of trading fervor. As it was, Iodin had managed to talk them into buying his silks for 4 times as much as they were worth. The king had been beaming so widely as Serene left that he almost appeared to have forgiven her for her charade.
Clever? Serene asked innocently, in response to Aishi's comment. Me?
The Sion bobbed, chuckling softly. Is there anyone you can't manipulate, my lady?
Father, Serene said. You know he gets the better of me 3 times out of 5.
He says the same thing about you, my lady, Aishi noted. Serene smiled, pushing open the door to her room to prepare for bed. It really wasn't that clever, Aishi. We should have realized that our problems were really solutions to one another. One an offer with no catch, the other a request with no sweetener. Aishi made noises of displeasure as he floated around the room, tisking, offended at its messy state.
What? Serene asked, unwrapping the black ribbon tied around her upper arm, the only remaining sign of her mourning.
The room has not been cleaned again, my lady, Aishi explained.
Well, it's not like I left it that messy in the first place, Serene said with a huff.
No, your highness is a very tidy woman, Aishi agreed. However, the palace maids have been lax in their duties. A princess deserves proper esteem. If you allow them to neglect their work, it won't be long before they stop respecting you.
I think you're reading too much into it, Aishi, Serene said with a shake of her head, pulling off her dress and preparing her nightgown. I'm supposed to be the suspicious one, remember?
This is a matter of servants, not lords, my lady, Aishi said. You are a brilliant woman and a fine politician, but you betray a common weakness of your class. You ignore the opinions of servants.
Aishi, Serene objected. I always treated my father's servants with respect and kindness.
Perhaps I should rephrase, my lady, Aishi said. Yes, you lack unkind prejudices. However, you don't pay attention to what the servants think of you. Not in the same way you are always aware of what the aristocracy thinks.
Serene pulled her nightgown over her head, refusing to show even a hint of petulance.
I've always tried to be fair.
Yes, my lady, but you are a child of nobility, raised to ignore those who work around you. I only suggest you remember that if the maids disrespect you, it could be as detrimental as if the lords did so.
All right, Serene said with a sigh. Point taken.
Fetch Miela for me. I'll ask her if she knows what happened.
Yes, my lady.
Aishi floated toward the window. However, before he left, Serene made one last comment. Aishi, she asked, the people loved Raoden, didn't they?
By all accounts, my lady. He was known for paying very personal heed to their opinions and needs.
He was a better prince than I am a princess, wasn't he? She asked, her voice falling.
I wouldn't say that, my lady, Aishi said. You are a very kind-hearted woman, and you always treat your maids well. Do not compare yourself to Raoden. It is important to remember that you weren't preparing to run a country, and your popularity with the people wasn't an issue. Prince Raoden was the heir to the throne, and it was vital that he understand his subjects' feelings.
They say he gave the people hope, Serene said musingly, that the peasants endured Iodin's outrageous burdens because they knew Raoden would eventually take the throne. The country would have collapsed years ago if the prince hadn't gone amongst them, encouraging them and reviving their spirits.
And now he's gone, Aishi said quietly.
Yes, he's gone, Serene agreed, her voice detached. We have to hurry, Aishi. I keep feeling that I'm not doing any good, that the country is heading for disaster no matter what I do. It's like I'm at the bottom of a hill watching an enormous boulder crash down toward me, and I'm throwing pebbles up to try and deflect it.
Be strong, my lady, Aishi said in his deep, stately voice. Your god will not sit and watch as Aerilon and Teod crumble beneath Wyrn's heel.
I hope the prince is watching as well, Serene said. Would he be proud of me, Aishi?
Very proud, my lady.
I just want them to accept me, she explained, realizing how silly she must sound. She had spent nearly 3 decades loving a country, without ever feeling it loved her back. Teod had respected her, but she was tired of respect. She wanted something different from Aerilon.
They will, Serene, Aishi promised. Give them time. They will.
Thank you, Aishi, Serene said with a quiet sigh. Thank you for enduring the lamentations of a silly girl.
We can be strong in the face of kings and priests, my lady, Aishi replied. But to live is to have worries and uncertainties. Keep them inside, and they will destroy you for certain, leaving behind a person so calloused that emotion can find no root in his heart.
With that, the Sion passed out the window, in search of the maid, Miela. By the time Miela arrived, Serene had composed herself. There had been no tears, just time spent in thought. Sometimes it was too much for her, and her insecurity simply had to boil out. Aishi and her father had always been there to support her during those times.
Oh dear, Miela said, regarding the state of the room.
She was thin and rather young, definitely not what Serene expected when she had first moved into the palace. Miela more resembled one of her father's accountants than she did a head maid.
I'm sorry, my lady, Miela apologized, offering Serene a wan smile. I didn't even think of this. We lost another girl this afternoon, and it didn't occur to me that your room was on her list of duties.
Lost, Miela? Serene asked with concern. A runaway, my lady, Miela explained. They aren't supposed to leave. We're indentured like the rest of the peasants. For some reason, we have trouble keeping maids in the palace, however. Domai knows why it is. No servant in the country is treated better than those here.
How many have you lost? Serene asked with curiosity.
She was the fourth this year, Miela said. I'll send someone up immediately.
No, don't bother tonight. Just make sure it doesn't happen again.
Of course, my lady, Miela said with a curtsy.
Thank you.
There it is again, Serene said with excitement, jumping out of her bed.
Eishi instantly burst back to full illumination, hovering uncertainly by the wall.
My lady?
Quiet, Serene ordered,
pressing her ear against the stone wall beneath her window, listening to the scraping sound.
What do you think?
I am thinking that whatever my lady had for supper, it isn't agreeing with her, Eishi informed her curtly.
There was definitely a noise there, Serene said, ignoring the jibe. Though Eishi was always awake in the mornings when she got up, he didn't like being disturbed after he had fallen asleep. She reached over to her nightstand and picked up a scrap of parchment. On it she made a mark with a thin piece of charcoal, not wanting to bother with pen and ink.
Look, she declared, holding up the paper for Eishi to see. The sounds always come on the same days of the week. Maydol and Opidol.
Eishi floated over and looked at the paper, his glowing aeon the room's only illumination besides starlight.
You've heard it twice on Maydol and twice on Opidol, 4 times in total, he said skeptically. That is hardly grounds for a decision that they always come on the same days, my lady.
Oh, you think I'm hearing things anyway, Serene said, dropping the parchment back onto her table. I thought Sions were supposed to have excellent auditory senses.
Not when we're sleeping, my lady, Eishi said, implying that that was exactly what he should have been doing at the moment.
There must be a passage here, Serene decided, ineffectually tapping the stone wall.
If you say so, my lady.
I do, she said, rising and studying her window. Look how thick the stone is around this window, Eishi. She leaned against the wall and stuck her arm out the window. The tips of her fingers could barely curl around the outside ledge. Does the wall really need to be so wide?
It offers much protection, my lady.
It also offers room for a passage.
A very thin one, Eishi replied.
True, Serene mused, kneeling down to view the bottom edge of the window at eye level. It slopes upwards. The passage was constructed to angle up, passing between the bottoms of the windows on this level and the first story.
But the only thing in that direction is the king's rooms, Serene finished.
Where else would a passage lead?
Are you suggesting that the king takes secret excursions twice a week in the middle of the night, my lady?
At precisely 11 o'clock, Serene said, eyeing the large grandfather clock in the corner of her room. It's always at the same time.
What possible reason could he have for such a thing?
I don't know, Serene said, tapping her cheek in contemplation.
Oh, dear, Eishi mumbled. My lady is concocting something, isn't she?
Always, Serene said sweetly, climbing back into bed. Turn down your light. Some of us want to get some sleep.
Chapter 21 Raythan sat down in his chair, wearing a red Dorethi robe instead of his armor, as he often did when he was in his chambers. The knock that came at his door was expected.
Come in, he said.
Arta Theereed entered, a man of good Fjordal stock. Theereed had a strong, tall frame, dark hair, and squarish features.
He was still well-muscled from his day's training in the monastery.
"Your Grace," the man said, bowing and falling to his knees with a proper sign of respect.
"Artith," Raythan said, lacing his fingers in front of himself. "During my time here, I've been watching the local priests. I have been impressed with your service in Yadith's kingdom, and I have decided to offer you the position of head Artith of this chapel."
Theryd looked up with surprise.
"Your Grace?"
"I had thought that I would have to wait to appoint a new head Artith until a new batch of priests arrive from Fjordan," Raythan said. "But, as I said, you have impressed me. I decided to offer you the position. And, of course," he added in his mind, "I don't have time to wait. I need someone to administrate the chapel now so that I can focus on other tasks."
"My lord," the Artith said, obviously overwhelmed, "I cannot accept this position."
Raythan froze.
"What?"
"No Dorethi priest would refuse a position of such power."
"I'm sorry, my lord," the man repeated, looking down.
"What reason have you for this decision, Artith?" Raythan demanded.
"I can give none, your grace. It just wouldn't be right for me to take the position. May I withdraw?"
Raythan waved his hand, disturbed. Ambition was such a cardinal Fjordal attribute. How had a man such as Theryd lost his pride so quickly? Had Fionn really weakened the priests in Kaer so soundly? Or was something else behind this man's refusal? A nagging voice inside of Raythan whispered that the banished Fionn was not to blame. Dilaf. Dilaf had something to do with Theryd's refusal. The thought was probably just paranoia, but it spurred Raythan forward with his next item of business. Dilaf had to be dealt with. Despite his stunt with the Elantrian, the Artith was growing increasingly influential with the other priests. Raythan reached into a desk drawer, pulling out a small envelope. He had made a mistake with Dilaf. While it was possible to channel a zealot's ardor, Raythan currently had neither the time nor the energy to do so. The future of an entire kingdom depended on Raythan's ability to focus, and he hadn't realized how much attention Dilaf would require. It could not continue. Raythan's world was one of control and predictability, his religion a logical exercise. Dilaf was like a boiling pot of water poured on Raythan's ice. In the end, they would both just end up weakened and dissipated, like puffs of steam in the wind. And after they were gone, Eirilan would die. Raythan put on his armor and left his room, entering the chapel. Several supplicants knelt in prayerful silence, and priests moved about busily. The chapel's vaulted ceilings and spirited architecture were familiar. This was where he should be most comfortable. Too often, however, Raythan found himself fleeing up to the walls of Elantris. Though he told himself that he simply went to the walls because their height gave him a vantage over Kaer, he knew that there was another reason. He went in part because he knew that Elantris was a place that Dilaf would never voluntarily go. Dilaf's chamber was a small alcove, much like the one Raythan himself had occupied as an Artith many years ago. Dilaf looked up from his desk as Raythan pushed open the room's simple wooden door. "My Rodin?" the Artith said, standing with surprise. Raythan rarely visited his chambers. "I have an important task for you, Artith," Raythan said. "One I cannot trust to anyone else."
"Of course, my Rodin," Dilaf said submissively.
bowing his head. However, his eyes narrowed with suspicion.
I serve with devotion, knowing I am part of the chain linked to Lord Yadath himself.
Yes, Raythan said dismissively. Ardeth, I need you to deliver a letter.
A letter?
Diloph looked up with confusion.
Yes, Raythan said flatly. It is vital Weir know of our progress here. I have written him a report, but the matters discussed therein are very delicate. If it should be lost, irreparable damage could be done. I have chosen you, my Odiv, to deliver it in person.
That will take weeks, my Rodin.
I know. I will have to go without your service for a time. But I will be comforted by the knowledge that you are engaged in a vital mission.
Diloph lowered his eyes, his hands falling to rest lightly on the top of his table.
I go as my Rodin commands.
Raythan paused, frowning slightly. It was impossible for Diloph to escape. The Rodin-Odiv relationship was irrevocably binding. When one's master commanded, one obeyed. Even so, Raythan had expected more from Diloph. A ploy of some kind. An attempt to wiggle out of the assignment. Diloph accepted the letter with apparent subservience.
Maybe this was what he wanted all along, Raythan realized. A way into Fjordan.
His position as Odiv to a Yorn would give him power and respect in the East. Perhaps Diloph's only purpose in antagonizing Raythan had been to get out of Aerilan. Raythan turned and walked back out into the chapel's hollow sermon hall. The event had been even more painless than he had hoped. He held back a sigh of relief, stepping with a bit more confidence as he walked toward his chambers. A voice sounded from behind. Diloph's voice. Speaking softly, yet with enough projection to be heard.
Send out messengers, the Ardeth ordered to one of the Dorvans. We leave for Fjordan in the morning.
Raythan nearly kept walking. He almost didn't care what Diloph was planning or what he did, as long as he left. However, Raythan had spent too long in positions of leadership, too long as a political being, to let such a statement pass, especially from Diloph. Raythan spun.
We? I ordered only you, Ardeth.
Yes, my lord, Diloph said.
However, surely you don't expect me to leave my Odivs behind.
Odivs? Raythan asked.
As an official member of the Dorethi priesthood, Diloph was able to swear Odivs just as Raythan had, continuing the chain that linked all men to Yadith. Raythan hadn't even considered, however, that the man might call Odivs of his own. When had he found the time?
Who, Diloph? Raythan asked sharply. Whom did you make your Odiv?
Several people, my Rodin.
Diloph responded evasively.
Names, Ardeth.
And he began to name them. Most priests called one or two Odivs. Several of the Yorns had as many as 10. Diloph had over 30. Raythan grew increasingly stunned as he listened. Stunned and angry. Somehow, Diloph made Odivs out of all Raythan's most useful supporters, including Weyrein and many of the other aristocrats. Diloph finished his list, turning traitorously humble eyes toward the floor.
An interesting list, Raythan said slowly. And who do you intend to take with you, Ardeth?
Why, all of them, my lord, Diloph said innocently. If this letter is as important as my lord implies,
then I must give it proper protection.
Raythan closed his eyes. If Dilaf took all of the people he had mentioned, then it would leave Raythan stripped of supporters. Assuming that was, they would go. The calling of Odiv was very demanding. Most normal Dorethi believers, even many priests, were sworn to the less restrictive position of Krondet. A Krondet listened to the counsel of his Roden, but was not morally bound to do what he was told. It was well within Dilaf's power to make his Odivs accompany him to Fjordan. Raythan could have no control over what the Artith did with his sworn followers. It would be a grave breach of protocol to order Dilaf to leave them behind. However, if Dilaf did try to take them, it would undoubtedly be a disaster. These men were new to Shudarith. They didn't know how much power they had given Dilaf. If the Artith tried to drag them to Fjordan, it was unlikely they would follow. And if that happened, Raythan would be forced to excommunicate every single one of them. Shudarith would be ruined in Aerilon. Dilaf continued his preparations as if he hadn't noticed Raythan's internal battle. Not that it was much of a conflict. Raythan knew what he had to do. Dilaf was unstable. It was possible that he was bluffing, but equally likely that he would destroy Raythan's efforts in spiteful retribution. Raythan gritted his teeth until his jaw throbbed. Raythan might have stopped Dilaf's attempt to burn the Elantrian, but the Artith had obviously realized what Raythan's next move would be. No, Dilaf didn't want to go to Fjordan. He might have been unstable, but he was also much better prepared than Raythan had assumed. "Wait," Raythan ordered, as Dilaf's messenger turned to leave. If that man left the chapel, all would be ruined.
"Artith, I have changed my mind."
"My Roden?" Dilaf asked, poking his head out of his chamber.
"You will not go to Fjordan, Dilaf."
"But my lord..."
"No. I cannot do without you."
The lie made Raythan's stomach clench tightly.
"Find someone else to deliver the message."
With that, Raythan spun and stalked toward his chambers. "I am, as always, my Roden's humble servant," Dilaf whispered, the room's acoustics carrying the words directly to Raythan's ears.
Raythan fled again. He needed to think to clear his mind. He had spent several hours stewing in his office, angry at both Dilaf and himself. Finally, he could stand it no longer, and so he absconded to the night streets of Kay. As usual, he directed his path toward Elantris's wall. He sought height, as if rising above the dwellings of man could give him a better perspective on life.
"Spare some coins, sir," pled a voice.
Raythan stopped in surprise. He had been so distracted that he hadn't noticed the rag-clothed beggar at his feet. The man was old and obviously had poor sight, for he was squinting up at Raythan in the darkness. Raythan frowned, realizing for the first time that he had never seen a beggar in Kay. A youth, dressed in clothing no better than that of the old man, hobbled around the corner. The boy froze, blanching pale white.
"Not him, you old fool," he hissed.
Then to Raythan he quickly said,
"I'm sorry, my lord. My father loses his wits sometimes and thinks he is a beggar. Please forgive us."
He moved to grab the old man's arm. Raythan held up his hand commandingly, and the youth stopped, growing another shade paler. Raythan knelt down beside the elderly man, who was smiling with a half-senile daze.
"Tell me, old man," Raythan asked,
Why do I see so few beggars in the city?
The king forbids begging in his city, good sir, the man croaked. It is a poor sign of prosperity to have us on his streets. If he finds us, he sends us back to the farms.
You say too much, the youth warned, his frightened face indicating that he was very close to abandoning the old man and bolting away. The elderly beggar wasn't finished.
Yes, good sir, we mustn't let him catch us. Hide outside the city, we do.
Outside the city? Raythan pressed.
K.E. isn't the only town here, you know. There used to be four of them, all surrounding Elantris. But the others dried up. Not enough food for so many people in such a small area, they said. We hide in the ruins.
Are there many of you? Raythan asked.
No, not many. Only those who've the nerve to run away from the farms.
The old man's eyes took on a dreamy look.
I wasn't always a beggar, good sir. Used to work in Elantris. I was a carpenter, one of the best. I didn't make a very good farmer, though. The king was wrong there, good sir. He sent me to the fields, but I was too old to work in them, so I ran away. Came here. The merchants in the town, they give us money sometimes, but we can only beg after night comes, and never from the high nobles. No, sir, they would tell the king.
The old man squinted up at Raythan, as if realizing for the first time why the boy was so apprehensive.
You don't look much like a merchant, good sir, he said hesitantly.
I'm not, Raythan responded, dropping a bag of coins in the man's hand. That is for you. Then he dropped a second bag beside the first. That is for the others. Good night, old man.
Thank you, good sir, the man cried.
Thank Yadith, Raythan said.
Who is Yadith, good sir?
Raythan bowed his head. You'll know soon enough, old man. One way or another, you'll know. The breeze was gusty and strong atop the wall of Elantris, and it whipped at Raythan's cape with glee. It was a cool ocean wind, bearing the briny scent of salt water and sea life. Raythan stood between two burning torches, leaning against the low parapet and looking out over Kei. The city wasn't very large, not when compared with the sheer mass of Elantris, but it could have been far better fortified. He felt his old dissatisfaction returning. He hated being in a place that couldn't protect itself. Perhaps that was part of the stress he was feeling with this assignment. Lights sparked throughout Kei, most of them street lamps, including a series that ran along the short wall that marked the formal border of the city. The wall ran in a perfect circle, so perfect, in fact, that Raythan would have remarked upon it had he been in any other city. Here it was just another remnant of fallen Elantris's glory. Kei had spilled out beyond that inner wall, but the old border remained, a ring of flame running around the center of the city.
It was so much nicer once, a voice said behind him.
Raythan turned with surprise. He had heard the footsteps approaching, but he had simply assumed it was one of the guards making his rounds. Instead, he found a short, bald Aireline in a simple gray robe. Omine, head of the Karathi religion in Kei. Omine approached the edge, pausing beside Raythan and studying the city. Of course, that was back then, when the Elantrian still ruled. The city's fall was probably good for our souls. Still, I can't help recalling those days with awe.
Do you realize that no one in all of Aerilon went without food? The Elantrians could turn stone into corn and dirt into steak. Confronted by those memories, I am left wondering, could devils do that much good in this world? Would they even want to?
Raythan didn't respond. He simply stood, leaning with his arms crossed on top of the parapet, the wind churning his hair. Omine fell silent.
How did you find me? Raythan finally asked. It is well known that you spend your nights up here, the squat priest explained. He could barely rest his arms on the parapet.
Raythan considered Delav short, but this man made the Artith look like a giant.
Your supporters say you come here and plan how to defeat the vile Elantrians, Omine continued. And your opponents say you come because you feel guilty for condemning a people who have already been cursed.
Raythan turned, looking down into the little man's eyes.
And what do you say? I say nothing, Omine said. It doesn't matter to me why you climb these stairs, Raythan. I do, however, wonder why you preach hatred of the Elantrians, when you yourself simply pity them.
Raythan didn't respond immediately, tapping his gauntleted finger against the stone parapet with a repetitious click.
It's not so hard, once you accustom yourself to it, he finally said. A man can force himself to hate if he wishes, especially if he convinces himself that it is for a higher good. The oppression of the few brings salvation to the many? Omine asked, a slight smile on his face, as if he found the concept ridiculous. You'd best not mock, Aerilene, Raythan warned. You have few options, and we both know the least painful one will require you to do as I do. To profess hatred where I have none. I will never do that, Raythan.
Then you will become irrelevant, Raythan said simply.
Is that the way it must be, then?
Shu-Korath is docile and unassuming priest, Raythan said. Shu-Dareth is vibrant and dynamic. It will sweep you away like a roaring flood rushing through a stagnant pool.
Omine smiled again.
You act as if truth were something to be influenced by persistence, Raythan. I am not speaking of truth or falsehood. I am simply referring to physical inevitability. You cannot stand against Fjordan. And where Fjordan rules, Shu-Dareth teaches.
One cannot separate truth from actions, Raythan, Omine said with a shake of his bald head. Physically inevitable or not, truth stands above all things. It is independent of who has the best army, who can deliver the longest sermons, or even who has the most priests. It can be pushed down, but it will always surface. Truth is the one thing you can never intimidate.
And if Shu-Dareth is the truth? Raythan demanded.
Then it will prevail, Omine said. But I didn't come to argue with you.
Oh, Raythan said with raised eyebrows.
No, Omine said. I came to ask you a question.
Then ask, priest, and leave me to my thoughts.
I want to know what happened, Omine began speculatively. What happened, Raythan? What happened to your faith?
My faith? Raythan asked with shock.
Yes, Omine said, his words soft, almost meandering. You must have believed at one point, otherwise you wouldn't have pursued the priesthood long enough to become a Yawn. You lost it somewhere, though. I have listened to your sermons. I hear logic and complete understanding,
not to mention determination. I just don't hear any faith. And I wonder what happened to it.
Raythan hissed inward slowly, drawing a deep breath between his teeth.
Go, he finally ordered, not bothering to look down at the priest.
Omine didn't answer, and Raythan turned. The Aerilish man was already gone, strolling down the wall with a casual step, as if he had forgotten Raythan were there. Raythan stood on the wall for a long time that night. Chapter 22. Raedon inched forward, slowly peeking around the corner. He should have been sweating. In fact, he kept reaching up to wipe his brow, though the motion did nothing but spread black Elantris grime across his forehead. His knees trembled slightly as he huddled against the decaying wooden fence, anxiously searching the cross street for danger.
Sule, behind you!
Raedon turned with surprise at Galadin's warning, sliding on the slimy cobblestones and slipping to the ground. The fall saved him. As he grappled for purchase, Raedon felt something whoosh through the air above him. The leaping madman howled in frustration as he missed and smashed through the fence, rotten wood chips spraying through the air. Raedon stumbled to his feet. The madman moved far more quickly. Bald and nearly naked, the man howled as he ripped his way through the rest of the fence, growling and tearing at the wood like a mad hound. Galadin's board smacked the man directly in the face. Then, while the man was stunned, Galadin grabbed a cobblestone and smashed it against the side of the man's head. The madman collapsed and did not rise. Galadin straightened.
They're getting stronger somehow, Sule, he said, dropping his cobblestone. They seem almost oblivious to pain. Kolo?
Raedon nodded, calming his nerves.
They haven't been able to capture a newcomer in weeks. They're getting desperate, falling more and more into their bestial state. I've heard of warriors who grow so enraged during combat that they ignore even mortal wounds.
Raedon paused as Galadin poked at the attacker's body with a stick to make sure he wasn't feigning.
Maybe they've found the final secret to stopping the pain, Raedon said quietly.
All they have to do is surrender their humanity, Galadin said, shaking his head as they continued to sneak through what had been the Elantris market.
They passed piles of rusted metal and crushed ceramics, etched with aeons. Once these scraps had produced wondrous effects, their powerful magics demanding unparalleled prices. Now they were little more than obstacles for Raedon to avoid, lest they crunch noisily beneath his feet.
We should have brought Saolin, Galadin said quietly.
Raedon shook his head. Saolin is a wonderful soldier and a good man, but he's completely lacking in stealth. Even I can hear him approaching. Besides, he would have insisted on bringing a group of his guards. He refuses to believe I can protect myself. Galadin glanced at the fallen madman, then back at Raedon with sardonic eyes.
Whatever you say, Sule.
Raedon smiled slightly.
All right, he admitted. He might have been useful. However, his men would have insisted on pampering me. Honestly, I thought I'd left that sort of thing behind in my father's palace.
Men protect things they find important, Galadin said with a shrug.
If you object, you shouldn't have made yourself so irreplaceable.
Kolo?
Point taken, Raedon said with a sigh. Come on.
They fell quiet as they continued their infiltration. Galadin had protested for hours when Raedon had explained his plan to sneak in and confront Sheor. The doula had called it foolhardy, pointless, dangerous, and just plain stupid. He hadn't, however, been willing to let Raedon go alone. Raedon knew the plan probably was foolhardy, pointless,
and all the other things Galadin said. Sheor's men would rip them apart without a second thought. Probably without even a first thought, considering their mental state. However, during the last week, Sheor's men had tried to capture the garden 3 more times. Saolin's guards were collecting more and more wounds, while Sheor's men seemed to be getting even more feral and wild. Raoden shook his head. While his troop was growing, most of his followers were physically weak. Sheor's men, however, were frighteningly strong, and every one of them was a warrior. Their rage gave them strength, and Raoden's followers couldn't stand against them for much longer. Raoden had to find Sheor. If only he could speak with the man, he was sure they would find a compromise. It was said that Sheor himself never went on the raids. Everyone referred to the band as Sheor's men, but no one could ever remember seeing Sheor himself. It was entirely possible that he was just another maniac, indistinguishable from the rest. It was also possible that the man Sheor had joined the Hoed long ago, and the group continued without leadership. Still, something told him that Sheor was alive. Or perhaps Raoden simply wanted to believe so. He needed an adversary he could face. The madmen were too scattered to be efficiently defeated, and they outnumbered Raoden soldiers by a significant number. Unless Sheor existed, unless Sheor could be swayed, and unless Sheor could control his men, Raoden's band was in serious trouble.
"We're close now," Galadin whispered as they approached one final street. There was movement to one side, and they waited apprehensively until it appeared to have passed on.
"The bank," Galadin said, nodding to a large structure across the street.
It was large and boxy, its walls dark beyond even what the slime normally produced.
"The Elantrians maintain the place for the local merchants to keep their wealth. A bank inside Elantris was seen as far more secure than one in Kei."
Raoden nodded. Some merchants, like his father, hadn't trusted the Elantrians. Their insistence on storing their fortunes outside of the city had eventually proven wise.
"You think Sheor's in there?" he asked.
Galadin shrugged.
"If I were going to choose a base, this would be it. Large, defensible, imposing. Perfect for a warlord."
Raoden nodded.
"Let's go then."
The bank was definitely occupied. The slime around the front door was scuffed by the frequent passing of feet, and they could hear voices coming from the back of the structure. Galadin looked at Raoden inquiringly, and Raoden nodded. They went in. The inside was as drab as the outside, dull and stale, even for fallen Elantris. The vault door, a large circle etched with a thick Aeon Edo, was open, and the voices came from inside. Raoden took a deep breath, ready to confront the last of the gang leaders.
"Bring me food!" wailed a high-pitched voice.
Raoden froze. He craned his neck to the side, peeking into the vault, then recoiled with surprise. At the back of the chamber, sitting on a pile of what appeared to be gold bars, was a young girl in a pristine, unsoiled pink dress. She had long, aeonic blonde hair, but her skin was black and gray, like that of any other Elantrian. 8 men in ragged clothing knelt before her, their arms spread out in adoration.
"Bring me food!"
the girl repeated in a demanding voice.
"Well, behead me and see me in Dolokin," Galadin swore behind him.
"What is that?"
"Sheor,"
Rayadin said with amazement. Then his eyes refocused, and he realized that the girl was staring at him.
Kill them!
Shaor screamed.
Eidos Domai!
Rayadin yelped, spinning around and dashing toward the door.
If you weren't dead already, Sule, I'd kill you, Galadin said.
Rayodin nodded, leaning tiredly against a wall. He was getting weaker. Galadin had warned him it would happen. An Elantrian's muscles atrophied the most near the end of his first month. Exercise couldn't stop it. Even though the mind still worked, and the flesh did not decay, the body was convinced that it was dead. The old tricks worked the best. They had eventually lost Sheor's men by climbing up the side of a broken wall and hiding on a rooftop. The madmen might act like hounds, but they certainly hadn't acquired a dog's sense of smell. They had passed by Rayodin and Galadin's hiding place a half dozen times and never thought to look up. The men were passionate, but they weren't very intelligent.
Sheor is a little girl,
Rayodin said, still shocked. Galadin shrugged.
I don't understand either, Sule.
Oh, I understand it. I just can't believe it. Didn't you see them kneeling before her? That girl, Sheor, is their god, a living idol. They've regressed to a more primitive way of life, and have adopted a primitive religion as well.
Be careful, Sule, Galadin warned. Many people call Jeskar a primitive religion.
All right, Rayadin said, gesturing that they should begin moving again. Perhaps I should have said simplistic. They found something extraordinary. A child with long golden hair, and decided that it should be worshipped. They placed it on an altar, and it makes demands of them. The girl wants food, so they get it for her. Then, ostensibly, she blesses them.
What about that hair?
It's a wig, Rayodin said. I recognized her. She was the daughter of one of the most wealthy dukes in Aerilon. She never grew hair, so her father had a wig made for her. I guess the priest didn't think to take it off before throwing her in here.
When was she taken by the Sheod?
Over 2 years ago, Rayodin said. Her father, Duke Telrai, tried to keep the matter quiet. He always claimed she had died of Dionia, but there were a lot of rumors.
Apparently all true.
Apparently, Rayodin said with a shake of his head. I only met her a few times. I can't even recall her name. It was based on Aeon Soai. Soine, or something like that. I only remember that she was the most spoiled, insufferable child I'd ever met.
Probably makes a perfect goddess, then, Galadin said with a sarcastic grimace.
Well, you were right about one thing, Rayodin said. Speaking with Sheor isn't going to work. She was unreasonable on the outside. She's probably 10 times worse now. All she knows is that she's very hungry, and those men bring her food.
Good evening, my lord, a sentry said as they rounded a corner and approached their section of Elantris, or New Elantris, as the people were starting to call it.
The sentry, a stout younger man named Dione, stood up tall as Rayodin approached, a makeshift spear held firmly at his side.
Captain Saolin was quite disturbed by your disappearance.
Rayodin nodded. I'll be sure to apologize, Dione. Rayodin and Galadin pulled off their shoes and placed them along the wall next to several other dirty pairs, then put on the clean ones they had left behind. Also present was a bucket of water, which they used to wash off as much of the slime as they could manage. Their clothing was still dirty, but there was nothing else they could do. Cloth was rare, despite the numerous scavenging parties Rayadin had organized. It was amazing how much they found,
True, most of it was rusted or rotting, but Elantris was enormous. With a little organization and some motivation, they had discovered a great number of useful items.